Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Houston Curtis, whose book, Billion Dollar Hollywood Heist, An A-List Kingpin and the Poker Ring That Brought Down Tinseltown, gives us a very different version of what has become known as Molly's Game. Houston Curtis, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, Bob, thanks so much. Richard, thank you guys for having me. Been looking forward to coming on your show for some time now.
Good. Before we get into the game itself, tell us about your background in gambling and gambling-related things.
Well, Richard will remember one of the things I did a few years ago, executive producing the Ultimate Blackjack Tour. But my love for gambling started at a very young age. I actually learned my first card trick and my first had my first hand of poker around, I can't remember, it was somewhere between 5 and 7. I forget what I put in the book, but I was very young, very young. And I fell in love with both and played a lot of cards all through school, growing up. Matter of fact, I used to play poker with all my buddies at church on Sunday. We'd sneak down to the basement, skip the sermon, and play poker. And I started card manipulating, around that time too. And when I moved to Los Angeles at 18, I moved out to go to the Grove School of Music. I was also a musician and wanted to be in the entertainment business in some kind of way. I had already put the magic, my love for magic, kind of in a vault, in a safe. After I got a hold of a book called The Expert at the Card Table by S.W. Erdnase, written in 1902, I quit doing magic. I used to do it on the streets for money, and I used to do little shows like at my school. And but my love for gambling said, yeah, I'm going to keep this part of me a secret, and I'm going to put these skills to use one day at a card table. And that's exactly what I did once I got out to Los Angeles and started playing in a lot of card games from all throughout the 90s, as well as a lot of, straight up games in the casinos. And believe me, I saw my fair share of shenanigans going on in licensed casinos as well. And eventually that's what led me up to the big game with Toby and Leo and the boys.
Before we get into the big game, I'm fascinated by your comment that you saw a lot of shenanigans going on in licensed casinos. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I saw. I mean, at first, I felt like I had to check myself. It's like, is this really happening? I saw, at first you see the team play, which is, I guess, normal, and the collusion. But I saw dealers that were, this was, away from shuffle machines. They didn't have a lot of shuffle machines. I don't think they had any back then. I saw dealers doing, riffle stacking and, second dealing. I even saw some bottom dealing and, I knew they were partnered up with somebody at the table as soon as that happened. And I kind of kept my eye on those dealers. And I won't say which casino they were at, but they were at all of them.
and is this what, 70s, 80s?
No, this is 90s. This is like early 90s. Yeah. Early 90s. And, there would be a lot of, ways that guys could get a hold of, the casino cards, which I'm sure you've heard this stuff before. And, if they could get a hold of it, they would. And, there were, short decks going out with, cards already in a holdout. There were, all kinds of stuff. And, I was trying to just kind of learn to be great at the game when I was going in those casinos. But I just thought it was fascinating that, you know, the people who want to get that kind of an edge, they don't really care where they're doing it.
And your focus was poker when you were in the casinos, or were you also playing blackjack and stuff?
I at that time, when I saw some of these things, it was all at the poker tables. Now, I have also played blackjack, a lot of blackjack from the time I was, you know, probably before I turned 21, before I was legal to, I was already going to Vegas and playing. But I didn't get banned until 2000. I think we're shooting the Ultimate Blackjack Tour at the Venetian. And I kept getting buried at the Venetian. I couldn't beat their game for some reason. And I'd go over to the Nugget, and I'd win like 150 grand at the Nugget playing blackjack. Come back, get clobbered at the Venetian. Go to the Nugget the next night, win 110 grand. Come back, get clobbered. This happened three nights in a row where I won over six figures. And then I get clobbered again at the Venetian. So I'm trying to get up to like a 275K marker that I had there. And why I didn't just stay at the Nugget, I don't know. But I had $100 left on a Sunday night. And I put it in a video poker machine. I was just talking with a buddy. I was like, man, I guess we got to call it a night. And then I hit a royal flush. This is after I had been banned from the Nugget. I left that part out. I went back in like a fourth time, and they said, Mr. Curtis, you're no longer welcome to play here. And I was like, all right, well, I'll just play roulette. And they said, no, you can't play anything. And I found out later I'm one of two guys that were banned from the Nugget at that time for excessive winning. I thought, man, that's a heck of a thing. You win, don't go win at the Nugget or else you won't be invited back. But I went back with $100 and won $7,500 on a video poker and went over to Caesars and ran it up to $285,000. Paid off my marker and then made the Venetian give me back $15,000. So it was a hell of a trip down to my last $100 bill.
Before the game started in Hollywood, you were a movie producer or director or something. What was that all about?
Yeah, well, I've been producing television. Started in my 20s. I got a job actually playing guitar on a TV show called Showtime at the Apollo. I don't know if you guys heard of that show. It
was sure.
Taped out of New York, out of the Apollo, famous Apollo Theater. And it was produced by a man named Bob Banner, and Bob was a legendary variety show producer. He's the guy who created The Carol Burnett Show and Star Search and Solid Gold and The Gary Moore Show and The Jimmy Dean Show. Just an absolute legend. And so they were hiring me to do sound-alikes. They had a segment on the show called A Tribute to an Apollo Legend. And they called it the Apollo Minute. And they talk for a minute about like Bob Marley or the Pointer Sisters or Marvin Gaye. And they didn't want to pay the license fees to use the real music. So they hired me to come in and do sound-alikes. And I would just kind of cop a feel that sounded kind of, you know, reminiscent of one of their hits. But, you know, it was close enough to make you believe it was them, but far enough away so they didn't get sued. And that's how I got into the TV business. Like a month later, Bob asked me to come on as a production assistant because I was only getting paid $50 a session to do this guitar work. And before I knew it, I was producing talk shows. I ended up producing the Left to Go to Chicago, and I did the Jerry Springer Show for a while. I could write a whole book on my experience there. It was insane.
I'll bet.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Oh, yeah. Bailing hookers out of jail, you know, but right before we do a show called I Want to Confront My Pimp, a girl got pops for soliciting, right? And I got to go bail her out of jail so she could make it to the show. And on the way back, you know, I grew up in Southern Illinois, and this was in Chicago. On the way back, I asked her where she's from. She said, oh, I'm from Pinckneyville. I said, oh, my best friend Steve Pacey's from Pinkview. Steve Pacey, my sisters used to babysit him. I was like, you mean the same sisters that are coming on the show tomorrow to confront you about your pimp? So, yeah. Jesus. And then I went back to L.A. after I'd had enough of Springer and produced a lot of other shows in that vein, like the Gabrielle Carteris show from Beverly Hills 90210, did the Dating Game for Columbia TriStar, a bunch of stuff like that. Then I wound up as a development exec at MTV, where I created a bunch of shows and a bunch of stunt programming. And that kind of segued into me creating a video series right around the time Jackass came out. I created a video series called The Best of Backyard Wrestling. And I used to run the ads. You may have seen them late at night on like the Howard Stern show and Secret Underground Fight Clubs are risking their lives and we have it all caught on tape. And it was kids, you know, beating the hell out of each other in their backyards. And it just took off like gangbusters. Did a video game deal. I mean, basically became a self-made millionaire off of these videos, and then started my own company. And I really haven't worked for anyone else since.
So the book primarily is about a game where you are started by you and Tobey Maguire.
That's right.
How did you meet Tobey?
I was at the Commerce, and I went in to play one night. And I didn't go to the Commerce a lot, even in those days. I didn't, you know, I always tried to find private games. But every now and then, I'd like to go to the casinos and see what was going on. And they just set me down right next to him. And he was in there playing. And, you know, I noticed everyone was really starstruck by him. And I had been around, you know, a lot of celebrities at that point. I mean, I was successful, you know, my career was, you know, I felt like, you know, I was kind of seasoned in the entertainment business, a just different aspect of it than Tobey, but we had a lot of friends in common. We had a lot of things in common. So we just started chatting. And, I think he also, you know, identified how these people would, you know, get so excited to play with him that they would make bad moves against him. And he was still kind of learning at that point, but he was like a sponge. He was soaking it up really quick. And I got him off of a big hand with a semi bluff. I was betting on the com and he would not leave me alone. He just begging me and begging me and begging me to tell him if I had him or not. And then normally I wouldn't, you know, give away that information, but I thought in this case, it's probably to my benefit to go ahead and tell him. And I did. And we just kind of became pals. And I told him about another big game I was playing in, and he showed up there. And that night, at the end of that night, he invited me to his home game. And that's where it all started.
Now, you and Tobey would get rich people to come play, and a minor part of the book, but it'll be obvious to our listeners why I'm asking this, is you saw a similarity between the game with you and Tobey and the game KC Munchkin. So tell us what that's all about.
All right. Well, did you ever hear of remember the Atari 2600? It was like a video game unit. It was one of the first ones that came out that all the kids bought.
Yep.
And there was another one, not so popular, called the Odyssey 2. And they only sold it at Magnavox stores. This was back when they had Magnavox stores. And apparently one of the sales reps there told my mom that that was the best game video game system you could buy. So that's what I got for Christmas. And they had a game called KC Munchkin. It wasn't Pac-Man, but it was like Pac-Man. And it was actually really cool because they had a keyboard on it and you could build the maze. So being the little advantage loving kid that I was, I spent hours trying to figure out how to build a maze where, you know, just like Pac-Man, there was monsters that tried to get you as you ate the dots. I tried to figure out a way to build a maze where the monsters could never get me. And I did it. And I wanted to see what would happen. And when it only had three digits. It went up to, you know, after 999 points, I didn't know what was going to happen. So I just played and played and played. Monsters could not get me. got up to 999, and then it just rolled over and went to zero, and I was disappointed after that. But the analogy is, we built a game just like Casey Munchkin, you know, where the monsters couldn't get us. You know, there was no way that we were going to lose, because these guys were, A, they were never going to go broke, and B, they were never going to get any better at playing poker. It was like the perfect storm.
Well, and C, and I think this is the part that people wonder about. Some of this gets answered in the book, but you have the ability to cheat, so you can always win if you want, at least in the beginning, before there was a shuffling machine and a dealer, right? In the beginning, it was the deal passed?
Not in Toby's game. At the very beginning of Toby's game, he had his girlfriend then, who he later married, Jen Meyer, dealing. She was the dealer, but he didn't have the shuffle machine in the beginning. Now, I had been playing, even when I was playing in that game, I was playing in like two or three other games at the same time. One was a pass the deal game. One, I was a dealer at a game, and I had one partner, you know, I would just come in. I think I told him my name was Jake, and it was with, you know, some guys out in the valley, some Russian guys out in the valley. And, those games were, you know, those games were red hot. Now again, you know, it was usually one big hand a night, maybe two, but what I got roped into a lot with this one partner I had is he loved doing side bets. So he would do the you know, like the red, they pick three numbers, you know, 2, 3, 4, you know, that sucker bet. He would get like if you take 2, 3, 4 every flop, and everyone else or the guy you're playing against has every other number, he's a sucker. You know, it's a sucker bet. It's the bet they always get like new poker players to get sucked into. Well, what this guy did is he reversed it, or what we did, we reversed it where we would play the sucker and we would get one of these other players to get him to take the sucker bet.
So in the game with Toby, which ultimately became what people call Molly's game, you really weren't moving at all?
There were lots of little side games that would sprout up. And like, say if a game, guys were waiting for a seat, there'd be like, you know, it could be a three-way game going or a head up game going. Then there were a lot of side bets. Anytime that I got my hands on the deck of cards, or if I was in, there was a few scenarios where this was the case where I would be going 50-50 with someone for the night, and I could deal the winner to them, which is what I always preferred to do. Or if I could cap the deck on a cut, you know, and and give myself an advantage that way. I preferred not to deal myself the winning hand, you know, whenever I could avoid it. But for little things like high card and showdowns, I would hustle those things all the time. And they were a lot of fun. And the most I ever made off of a high card was $50,000. And it was the easiest hustle ever. It was just a peek beforehand, let him shuffle. I did a holdout on the card. It wasn't a peek. It was a call. I called like a ace of spades or whatever, and did a holdout. And he shuffled, gave it to me to cut. When I go to cut, I cap it, and then I mix all the cards like I'm doing a big wash on the table. And all you do is you keep your finger on the high card while you're doing the wash, you know.
Yeah.
And then let him pick you know, first, and you know, he's got, you got one out of 52 shot that he's not going to pick your card, the one you know what it is, and then you pick the winner, you know. So, and I won $50,000 doing that one time.
The big question I think that everybody wants to know is, did Toby know?
He did not. He did not know, and it's probably going to be a little embarrassing for him, that part of it, because he was very perceptive, and you know, the only guy that I have a gut feeling that might have known was Nick Cassavetes. Do you know who Nick is?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Nick. Nick's a sharp guy, so to speak. And hung around with a lot of sharp guys. At one point, he was developing a movie on Steve 40. And, you know, I had to sit there and act like I didn't know who he was. You know, I was like, wait, who's Steve 40? And I remember Russ Hamilton even came over to the game one night. And then Nick was telling Russ about him. And Russ started talking about all kinds of Steve 40 stories that were pretty awesome. Nick, I had a feeling he knew. One night, Brandon Davis came in, the oil air kid, and Nick just handed me the deck and said, let's chop him up before, you know, before the game starts. And we did a three-way freeze out, and Nick just dumped me in the second hand. It, you know, just gave me a wink, you know, like he knew I could just take care of it, and he was having me deal. So I don't know. I just had a feeling that he might have seen me do something in a side bet or something like that. He might have known. I've never talked to him about it, but I got put on the back end, the ass end of the guest list for Nick's game. And always super friendly, you know, but you know, I think, you know, Nick wanted to keep his win, just like me and Toby wanted to keep our winners down to me and him and a few other guys, select other guys. You know, Nick he ran his game, you know, in a very similar fashion. But Toby never knew. As far as I know, he never knew. He does now though. Yeah.
So while the game started at Toby's house, eventually it moved to the Viper Room on the Sunset Strip, which is where Molly Bloom came in.
Yes.
How did that get started? And at the beginning, what was Molly's role?
Okay. So the reason it got started is, you know, Toby's a vegan and he's a little eccentric and he's a little bit of a, you know, a germaphobe, I would say. Like, you know, whenever you walk in the house, he had like 12 pairs of Crocs. So everybody would take their shoes off and wear Crocs. You know, it was just kind of funny seeing like, you know, Jeffrey Katzenberg come in and say, what? Put on a pair of Crocs to walk into Toby's kitchen. Cause that's where he held the game, in his kitchen. And then guys would order a pepperoni pizza. And at one night after, there's a guy we played with named Kevin Washington. His father's Dennis Washington, the Montana billionaire. And Kevin is, you know, like 6'5", super good looking dude. Looks like a movie star. Looks like John Hamm or something like that. And but he's chewing tobacco and spitting into one of Toby's coffee cups. And he just couldn't take it. So after the game, he's like, dude, I have got to get these scumbags out of my house. We got to figure out somewhere else to beat them. And so we called our buddy Darren Feinstein, who had bought the Viper Room from Johnny Depp. And he's like, yeah, man, I would love to have the game here. Because he had a private room down at the bottom of the place. And his exact words were, it'll be private. It'll be locked off. Nobody will be able to get to us. And I'll have a hot little piece of ass named Molly serve drinks to the game. And we were like, okay. And we got there that night. We met Molly. And, you know, she was as green as, you know, like some girl from the Midwest getting off the bus to, you know, become an actress. I mean, she knew nothing about anything. But she was a sweetheart. And And it was a good front for us because, you know, Toby also didn't really want the game being directly associated with his house and his name so much. He prefers, you know, laying low. And that's how I got started.
So over time, Molly's role shifted.
Yes. In the beginning, her orders were simple. It was, we gave her a list of names and she just had to text everyone in a group text or individually, whatever. Sometimes it was a group text, say when the game is starting and ask who's in. And that was it. And then all of the supplies like drinks and all that stuff was already there at the Viper Room. And I'm pretty sure Darren made all that complimentary. He just liked having the game there. But at the end of the night, one thing that was true to the movie that happened, because there's a lot of things that weren't true in the movie, but one thing that was true is the guy who played Darren's character, or the guy who played Darren in the film, said, hey, you guys make sure and tip Molly. He didn't say if you want to be invited back, tip Molly, because, you know, it wasn't Darren's game either. You know, it was the game kind of belonged to itself, really, is the way we saw it. But he said, yeah, please tip Molly. So right out of the gate, Molly started making, you know, at the beginning it was like $2,000 a night, but still she was working full time for Darren, probably making $500 a week. And all of a sudden every Tuesday night, she'd be making a minimum of like $2,000. And that number shot up like a rocket really, really soon. And the game kind of got bigger and bigger. And what happened was there was an altercation or a disagreement between Darren and Molly. And Molly texted me one day and she said, hey, you know, could you and Tobe meet at Andy Bellin's house? We're going to have the game there tonight. And I didn't think anything of it. And so I picked up Toby when we went over to Andy's. And Andy is the guy who wrote the book Poker Nation. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that book.
Yep. Yeah.
And he was a good friend. He had consulted with me when I produced the Phil Hellmuth DVDs. And he had been seeing Molly. You know, in the movie, they act like she never slept with any of the players. Well, that wasn't true. And Andy's also the heir to the Chiquita banana fortune, by the way. And he said, you know, Darren threatened to take the game away from Molly and basically appealed to us to, you know, move the game out of the Viper Room. And so we did. And Toby and I kind of took that that was our cue to, you know, start making Molly work a little bit more. And so she was told, okay, we're going to let you, you know, continue hosting the game, but we want 5-star hotels. We don't want to have to deal with paying for it or booking it. You deal with all of that. And we're going to up the blinds to from 100, 200 to 200, 400 with a $50K buy-in. Because in the beginning, it was the whole hustle of the game was it was a $5K buy-in. So that's how we originally got guys in. They would put up $5,000 thinking, you know, they knew nothing about poker. So they're like, oh, it's just $5,000. I can sit with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire. But as you guys know, with 100, 200 blinds, $5,000 doesn't get you that far. And, you know, in one or two orbits, these guys would have reloaded, you know, once or twice. So a guy comes to sit and play with $5,000, ends up losing like 25,000, 35,000, which I thought was just the perfect scenario. And I thought we should just keep doing that as long as possible. But Toby, you know, he had a lot of money and he enjoyed competition and he wanted to amp it up. So I kind of, you know, I had to go along for the ride on that one. And we all went along for the ride. And Molly's responsibilities basically just now included booking a hotel, and we told her to bring players to us. But all the players that she brought were always vetted by us and approved by the game. You know, no one ever once, not one time, did someone get in that game through Molly's approval. You know,
she makes it sound in the book. She very clearly makes it sound like if someone didn't pay what they owed, she was responsible for settling their debt.
Not at all. That is one of the most annoying little lies in the whole thing. Now, when she went to New York, she might have gotten herself over, you know, her head under the water there, but she was never responsible for one single solitary debt in our game the entire 5 years it ran. Not even all right. Close. All she did was manage. She would flow a lot of the money through her books because people came with checks, and sometimes if they left early, we didn't know who the check was going to. And sometimes she started having them, you know, made out to her company. And she was also taking so much tips out of the game. You know, she started like an entertainment company or a hosting company. I don't know what she called it, but you know, basically she was at that point, she was making $30,000 a night in tips. You know, she was one of her and the dealer were the only two who never lost in the game ever.
All right. We're talking to Houston Curtis about his book, Billion Dollar Hollywood Heist. We'll return in a few seconds talking about how Leonardo DiCaprio started out in the game. But right now we have to do a commercial break. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The South Point is now closed, along with all the other casinos in Nevada and basically everywhere. I normally have 2 semesters of video poker classes at the South Point, once starting in August or September and once beginning in January. It wouldn't surprise me if the fall semester this year was canceled. Even if we're back in casinos by that point, which I hope we are, and I suspect we will be, there will very well could still be social distancing rules, which would preclude the kind of classes I have. Hopefully, by next January, we'll be back to normal on this. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. Gambling with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. The markets on when Bernie Sanders will drop out of the race and who and when Elizabeth Warren will endorse, those have been decided. One current market with a lot of interest as we tape this is who the Democratic vice president nominee will be. Blackjack Apprenticeship is an excellent site for those of you who wish to be successful at counting cards of blackjack. They have a variety of training programs. Colin Jones posts a number of free videos on YouTube.com where you can check out if his teaching style works for you. If it does work for you, consider becoming a member where they have a large, large number of videos that you can learn from. The next boot camp is May 30th to 31st. This was announced shortly before the coronavirus situation started closing a large number of Las Vegas gathering. Whether the boot camp will go on or not right now is an open question. If it's on, it presents good value for aspiring card counters. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. An additional membership, Pro membership, is sold separately at $6.95 a month or $49.95 a year. Listeners can play 1,000 hands for free to try it out at videopoker.com/GWAE. The biggest advantage of this is the video poker software that corrects you on both quick quads and Ultimate X. I recently completed 3 separate articles on the game Triple Bonus Poker Plus. You haven't seen them yet on my weekly columns, but they're in the queue and you will. And I went through a lot on this site and practiced with it, and it gives a different kind of correction and knowledge than either Video Poker for Winners or Win Poker or any of the other sites I've seen. So every different sort of knowledge that you get can help you improve, and there's no telling what particular way of learning is going to work best for you. All right, we are back talking to Houston Curtis.
Hey.
Now, Leonardo DiCaprio is very wealthy. This is, we're talking about early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he wanted you and Toby to stake him to play in your game. Why was that? Did you agree to it? And why?
Yeah, I did agree to it. I was never with Leo. I'm assuming there was a moment where Leo told Toby, yeah, I'll play and, you know, if you stake me. But the night before the game, you know, we had put this plan together. Leo's going to draw in big fish. We got the $5,000 low buy-in. That's going to draw people in. They're not going to feel like they can get hurt. And they won't even think about the 102 or how high the blinds are. And they're all going to kind of, you know, they're going to want to come and sit and play with Leo and Toby. And right before the game, Toby's like, so, you know, we got to stake Leo. I said, what? And he said, yeah, man, the guy's free rolling on life. he doesn't pay for anything. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. But I, at the same time, I got it. You know, I remember being over at Leo's once. I was waiting for Toby to show up, and I don't know why I was at Leo. They live right by each other, but I guess Toby asked me to meet him there, and he was running late. So Leo showed me his house, and he said, check this out, man. And he showed me all these great couches he had. He said, so I made this deal with, Giorgio Armani, and he's gonna reupholster every one of my couches in this like genuine Armani leather for free, and all I gotta do is wear an Armani suit to three events, and that's the only kind of suit I wear anyway. And then he was cracking up about it. You know? And you know, it just goes to show you, once you're rich and famous and you can afford anything in the world you want, apparently you no longer have to pay for anything.
That's a great line, free rolling on life.
You were probably the strongest player in the game. Toby could have cut you out at any time.
That is
why. Did he let you stay?
You know, it's a good question, and it's one I'm very happy to answer. Because he was a friend and he liked me. And he knew that I would show up at every game. I love poker as much as him. You know, I mean, we used to get together on off nights and just discuss the game, play heads up while we were screwing around on something else. He just always kind of had my back, and we just kind of became pals. And he's the kind of guy who takes care of his friends, you know. But he would, you know, he would bust my chops a lot, and you know, always make funny little, you know, threats about you know, getting me booted, because guys would complain. They're not going to complain about dumping to Toby. You know, they'd lose to Toby, but he's Toby. But when a guy loses to, you know, a non-celebrity like six times in a row, it can get painful. You know. And Toby would be like, oh, you're crazy. Houston's great for the game. Don't you remember that one time when he lost that $100,000 pot to blah, blah, and he would point out some kind of, you know, hand, and they would go, oh, well, yeah. I don't know, man. But but he kept me in there way longer than I would have been able to stay had I not, you know, had someone with that much influence who had my back.
Did you ever have intentional losing nights to make him to keep you around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Matter of fact, the second night I played with him, that was a stage dump from the beginning. I had won at the Commerce. So he got to know me while I was winning, you know, a decent amount of money off of, you know, all those Commerce grinders. And and then we show up at this guy, Reagan Silver's house. And Reagan was he was a class action attorney out of Texas. He won a big case. And then he invested in a tech stock. It might have been Sprint, but I don't quote me on that. But he made a ton of dough, and he moved to Hollywood, and he was getting involved with some different entertainment ideas. And super, super nice guy, and he loved poker. And he was super rich. So that was the first game outside of the Commerce where Toby and I hooked up. And my friend John Moonves was there, who, you know, ended up being my partner on the Ultimate Blackjack Tour and was – Les Moonves' brother. He's one of the biggest kind of entertainment attorneys in Hollywood, and some other guys we knew. And that night I decided I was going to put on a little bit of a show. I started, having drinks because I never drink at the table, and it was just kind of opening my game up. And I didn't lose much, but I tossed $8,000 or something like that to the game. And it worked like a charm because I got the invite to Toby's right that night. He's like, "Hey, man, you're a lot of fun to play with. Why don't you come to my place tomorrow?" So first I had to do it to him, and then we started crushing the game, together. But every now and then I would have to, you got to dump like 50, 60 grand to a guy so you can get, 300-400 grand from him over the next, few weeks. I didn't do it often. I hated doing it. Matter of fact, I think that's probably why Cassavetes, had me. I was on started out on the A list for his game and then went to the B list because I wouldn't dump as much as he would have liked. That's my guess. I hated doing it, but, sometimes you got to.
Was your wife good with these swings?
Yeah, she was because she, and I don't want to get into any names or anything, but she grew up in a family. Her father was a world-class football handicapper.
Uh-huh.
And if I said the name that he went under, you would know it, but he never told anyone that was his what his real name was, who knew him from that world. One day, off the record, we can talk about it. Anthony Curtis knows who it is. She was used to, gray area. For a girl who grew up in Beverly Hills and was a debutante and went to Westlake School for Girls, she was like Blair Warner from The Facts of Life. she grew up with some gray area moments, having a father who's in that kind of business.
So he was a bettor, not a bookmaker?
No. He people would pay him for his picks.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, he sold his picks. He was one of the pioneers of that kind of industry.
Now, you had some minnows in the game, a few of whom became sharks.
Yeah, there was some tough. There was there's some tough players that. I'll give you some good example. Bob Safai was a tough player. When he wanted to really play solid poker, Bob always said, "Yeah, I'm playing with funny money," because he was so wealthy. But when he wanted to play poker, you had to watch out for him, and he could take your lights out. And there was a guy named Bosco who I could never pronounce his last name. It was like this real long name. And rumor has it he had married a 90-year-old billionaire. And I mean, I believe it because the guy looked, he was in his, like, I don't know, probably late 60s then, maybe early 70s. Yeah, late 60s, I would say. But he always looked like $1 million. You know, he's wearing like, you know, $5,000 suits. And no matter how big, he could lose $100,000, $200,000. Didn't even, you know, he didn't ruffle his feathers at all. He's the guy, he actually funded, you remember when they had, James Woods? It was an odd pairing. It was James Woods paired with Vinnie Van Patten, and they did Hollywood Poker. Remember HollywoodPoker.com, the online poker site? It was like a skin of something else. But they started getting some users for a minute. And Bosco was the guy behind that. But he was – I even heard Doyle told – I think he told Toby or one of us – it wasn't me, but I think it was Toby when Bosco's name was brought up that he used to play back in the days, like when Doyle was on the road playing. He played with Bosco, you know. So there were some decent players in the game, you know. And even guys like you know, Mike Baxter, who also played on that high stakes poker, which they came to our game to recruit players for that TV show. And none of us would do it, but Mike and Bobby.
Nick Cassavetes would go on that show.
Yeah, Cassavetes would go on every now and then. He was always fun to watch.
Was Rick Solomon any good?
When I first started playing Rick, I thought, man, we got a live one. But there's two Ricks. Okay, there's inebriated Rick or high Rick, you know, and then there's straight and sober Rick. And straight and sober Rick is a dangerous gambler, you know. Well, high Rick can be a dangerous gambler too, as I found out one night when I got one outed for $1 million, but not to jump there too soon. But, you know, usually – if Rick was you know, messed up or something, in those days he was a little bit. Now he's like really healthy and doing great, but he partied a little bit back then. And if he was in a party mode, he'd be, you know, really fun for the game. But when he decided he wanted to play, you know, he could take your lights out too. It was the guys like, you know, getting like guys like Guy Liberté in early. And there was a guy named Larry Hahn who Todd Phillips, the, you know, the guy who directed The Hangover, and he just directed Joker, which became the first $1 billion, I think, rated R movie of all time. He would always joke with Larry. He called him Old Spice because Larry was the guy. You ever been to like New York when a hustler comes up on the street and they say, "Hey, if you like Chanel number 5, you'll love this." And they try and sell you the fake perfume. That's right. Larry Hahn. He built like a $300 million business doing that. He was like the guy. So Todd always called him Old Spice. And hell, I remember one night Larry would tip even when he lost for the night. He'd still tip Molly like 10 grand. It was insane. And one night he got to him with Chuck Pacheco, who was Chuck's a big sports bettor, and he's a big nightclub owner, and he's a producer. He's the producing partner for Nick Cassavetes and a really good poker player. And but he got him like he rivered Chuck, you know, he got lucky on a like an open ended straight or something. And Chuck, you know, he's just, "Ah, damn it." And Larry goes, "Oh, it's all right. It's all right, Chuck. Here you go." And he handed him the money back. It was like 30 grand. And Chuck, he looked at me. He's like, "Houston, Larry just gave me a Prius."
Did Dan Blazarian ever play in the game?
No. Dan played one time. And Toby and him, I don't know, Dan says him and Toby didn't get along. I barely remember Dan from the night. that he played. I met Dan a little more later. I actually produced a kind of a sizzle reel where he went to open a strip club at one point. We're going to call it All In. And he wanted to go around the world and travel the world and find the best strippers. he was convinced that he could improve the strip club. But then he got distracted and, you know, too busy doing other things to go through with it. But he showed up once, but he was not in our game like a lot of people think he was. Affleck played a lot, and Jamie Gold was great for the game.
So Houston, I want to hear about Jamie Gold. I want to hear about your $1 million lost on a one outer, and we're out of time.
Started talking about Ultimate Bet yet.
Do you, by any chance, can we have you back next week to talk some more about this?
Would love to, my friend. Would love to.
Oh, wow. That's the right answer. Okay. So Richard and I usually end the show with what we call recommendations, where something that we've come across that we think our listeners might appreciate. So, Richard, do you have something to recommend today?
Well, yeah, I don't mean to steal your ideas, but we both have talked in the past about Masterclass. And
yes.
So I have kind of been zooming through Masterclass. I've taken Annie Leibovitz's photography class. I took Steve Martin's comedy class. Right now I'm in Scorsese's film class. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying Masterclass.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really enjoying that. I'm, like, on a 148-day streak on Duolingo. So if you want to learn a language, you can take it there for free, although I'm kind of pissed that they don't have Tagalog. And actually, I want to ask Houston, if we have time, something I've recommended last week or the week before is the book Gambling Sleight of Hand, 40 Years of Research by Steve Forti. I'm wondering if you've read those yet and what you thought.
Well, I've got them, but the problem with recommending them is they're all sold out.
Oh.
Did you guys actually get a copy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got a copy.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a copy too, and but I was too late to get a hard copy, and I was hanging out with, I don't know if you know who Jason England is. He's also a magician and really good card manipulator, and Jason had been doing, I think he helped take some of the pictures and did a lot of stuff. He's a great historian when it comes to moves and whatnot, and I know he's close with 40. And I had told him to remind me, and he forgot to remind me, and it went up one day and was sold out. So I managed to get a PDF.
Oh, wow.
But I will be buying the book whenever it's available because I have to have it in my collection. And I would suggest that anybody who is interested in card manipulation to definitely get that book. Definitely get his casino protection and poker protection books and his videos. It's just a joy to watch him work. And then as far as, card manipulation goes, if there's anyone who's really like interested, but they don't know where to start, you really just have to start with the Bible. And the Bible is, I will officially recommend, Expert at the Card Table by S.W. Erdnase, the gambler who created a fictitious name to sell books back in 1902, and it became the Bible for card sheets.
Probably won't be able to get him on the show.
No, but I'm writing my own book, Million Dollar Mechanic, with Anthony Curtis, and when that's ready, I'll come back and talk about that.
That sounds like a deal. So we're going to be talking to Houston again next week. So thank you, Houston. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody.
Thank you, guys.